Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Cues of the Force. The Cues stands for questions. Questions of the Force, and we also have A's. A's of the Force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Knapsack. I got your A's right here. I used to have an open A's cap. A's everywhere, so there you go.
We got A's coming. Anyway, our first A is Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Or do you have a Star Wars data pad? Maybe it would play on there. We are continuing to recommend the next High Republic adventure, Path to Deceit by Tessa Gratton and Justina Ireland. It stares at me on my bookshelf. It looks me in the eye saying, read me, and soon we will. If you want to give it a listen, you can download that audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook. We also have another A. We've been doing this segment of Current Ask, where we're looking at something we're trying to achieve and just taking off our imaginary hats. Maybe Ken is actually wearing a ball cap and saying, hey, we need help with this. Here's the fun thing. I don't know, Ken, if you and I agreed on what we're asking for on this particular episode.
We didn't. Not disagreed, but just our notes probably don't show the same thing. So here's, I'm going to go where my heart tells me, Joseph, and maybe the force leads me. We've put some wonderful content up there, some shorts, some Star Wars essays. We got episodes of Figure Fights. So in order to make that grow, we're going to ask if you consider subscribing to the channel. We've had a goal out there, about 7,000. We're so close. In fact, hey, who knows? At the time of this recording, maybe we exploded in popularity and we crossed over it. But that just means we still need your help as we expand Force Center on YouTube, expand what we do, and share our voice, our version of Star Wars fandom, right? Our personalities out there on this scary internet thing. So if you want to join in that cause, we'd love you to subscribe. Hit that notification bell so you don't miss episodes, live streams, and whatnot over there. So there you go. That's the ask.
That is my new favorite way to ask for subscriptions on YouTube. Please join my personality on the scary internet thing.
a subscription is a vote of confidence in my soul.
Oh, yeah. We want votes of confidence, not the vote of no confidence made famous by the Phantom Menace. We know it exists other places. Anyway, but we're talking about Star Wars. We're going to get into our cues. We have two questions from Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we go first to Twitter and G.S. Fords. G.S. Fords, that is great. That sounds like an early American who started in some sort of industry. Anyway, G.S. Ford says, following Lando's betrayal on Cloud City, did Han and crew have dinner with Vader afterwards? Or was the dining room just the best place to catch them off guard? Just something I have thought about ever since watching. Thanks, and may the force be with you. May the force be with you, G.S. Fords. This is a great one. This is like a classic Star Wars question that I don't know we've talked about a ton. Where do you go with this, Ken?
This is a playground question. This is what, in 83 for me, but for those who watched Empire in 80, you're probably on the playground wondering this one. So I've been spending a lot of time in my life thinking about this one, G.S. Fords. There's a follow-up question, Joseph, of what do you think Vader was doing before that door opened? Just sitting there silently at the table, waiting, checking his phone, checking messages from Palpatine. Who knows? A lot going on there. But I here's what I got. No, they didn't touch any of that food. I think the dining room was just the best place to catch them off guard. I think it's a great way to look at it. But I do think this. I think there's a bunch of wasted leftover food. Maybe Fett takes an apple. I rewatched a scene this morning. I was trying to figure out what's on the table. Maybe there's a video pointed out somewhere in the world, like a plum, a space plum. Maybe Fett takes one for the road. Vader, we know, does not partake. But I think Vader would go, this is what he did. He went to great lengths to get these people, even at the cost of a nice dinner. But here's two things that I think happened, Joseph. One, when that door closes, we don't see it, of course. I think Han makes a crack about, can we at least eat first? Or, can we call a clawfish around? Like, I think he makes a wise crack. And then I think flash forward a bit, after everything's kind of happened, there's this right before Lando makes the big decision to spring them and with Lobot's help and all that stuff. I think before that, Lando at one point returns to that table, sits there in the dark and eats angrily alone with his thoughts after Vader changes the deal one too many times. And it's there at this table that he decides to do something. Like he presses the phone and calls Lobot. I think
I'm all for that deleted scene. A lot of logistical problems shooting it these days. But, Lando broods in the dark, munching.
Yeah, he's just like eating and it's really hitting him. You know, like they use this meal to trap my friends and there's nothing I can do. And what? Maybe there is something I can do as he takes a bite.
A big sip of space Corellian brandy, right? Thinking about the old times. I love that. I love that image. I've been fascinated with that moment for a long time. I think it's pitched so well in the film that it feels heavy, it feels awful, you know. I'm sorry in Hans, I'm sorry too, like that stuck with me. And you know, I quoted that sometimes when bad things happen to me, people would say, I'm sorry. And I'd be like, I'm sorry too. I felt Han's pain. The look on Leia's face is so great. Such a great scene. And then you have the like, but wait, I mean, that's dinner. Vader sucking through a straw, doing jokes of blowing it back in and bubbling it up. Like, what is going on? I know there's a Robot Chicken sketch. You know, I have not seen it in, you know, a long time. I can't remember what all jokes they did. Believe it's been a couple of years now since we read it, but that From a Certain Point of View book, the Empire Strikes Back edition, I think did have some stuff with the chef or the wait staff setting up the table. So I think this question, this great playground question of joking, like, did they have dinner? I think it has been nibbled at a couple different places to find the comedy of it. But I really wanted to do a sketch back in the day when I had a monthly kind of comedy variety show that I produced with my brother. But there was about 15 of us who were kind of the regular cast. And like, I always wanted to do a sketch of this, and it just never happened, of just the awkward dinner conversation. So I love this question. I think going to the actual heart of it, of like, that is kind of a weird place. Why would Vader do that? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I like the GS Ford's thought that it is a strategically sound place to grab them, to catch them off guard. But I think for the sake of the movie and the character of Vader, it's theatrical, right? It's good storytelling because it's theatrical. You know, it's much more engaging and interesting than just knock on the door, surprise, Vader at their bedroom door, you know? But I think that's a part of Vader's character, that he is kind of theatrical, right? He wants to constantly impose his presence, right? He wants to have control and have people respect his power, and that comes down to physical, that comes down to his kind of some of his snarky comments, like, you know, apology accepted, Captain Nita, in front of other people.
So true.
he's a bit theatrical, and I think this is a very theatrical place to grab them. And I kind of come at it from the point of, this ship has been a thorn in Vader's side many times. This absolute no one smuggler, you know, that even Anakin probably would have looked down on Solo before he fell, right? Vader's gotta hate Han Solo so much, hate that Han Solo has, you know, gotten out of his grasp, you know? So I think he wants to twist the knife. And I feel like that's what this is, theater about twisting the knife. Not only is it a place for a, you know, a big surprise revelation, your friend betrayed you and you're absolutely bleeped, but I'm going to do that to you in a place of warmth and connection. It's a dining room. It's a formal dinner for honored guests. It's the place where you're going to relax. You're going to laugh. People are going to wait on you. It's a place you would want to be. And then surprise, no, it's not. It's hell. And I, you know, it's your worst nightmare, Solo, you know?
I'm thinking of Ian McDiarmid in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels when he leans over to Steve Martin. Welcome to hell. that works. No, I was going to go to the same spot too, of this is a, you know, that there's some little details I love. And again, we rewatched this scene. I've spent my entire life watching, but watch it again closer. And you got Lobot walking away. There's a Lobot's walking, right?
So like, he's going to get the stormtroopers.
Yes, he's going to get the troopers. And it's probably like, yep, everything's in place. Just got the thumbs up from Vader. And then there's that look that Lando gives Han and Leia and Chewie, but mostly Han, right before the door opens. It's heartbreaking. He knows what he's about to do. He knows what he's feeling. We know Lando and Billy Dee feels he's a survivor and he's got to do what he's got to do, but that's going to really crush his soul. And you know, and he knows it. I think he knows it. And he knows this deal's getting worse all the time. And there's so much stuff. It's so much about the trust. Game of Thrones, the world of Game of Thrones has guest rights. You enter that house, you don't want to violate that. That's something from history as well. And you know, so I think you're right. And then, yeah, Vader's a little jerk, man. Let's let Anakin's a sassy boy, man. He's got some lip, and he loves how to turn things and needle you. And I don't think Vader loses that. And that's one of the things going jumping to Rogue One and the, you know, don't, you know, choke on your aspirations. You know, I think you and I both said it's not necessarily our all time favorite Star Wars line, but I think over the years I have less of a reaction to it, a negative reaction like I did when I first saw it in 2016. Because yeah, now I can see Anakin saying that. I can see Anakin, and he's still there. So all of it turns into this really dramatic breaking of trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't have minded that line if there were a bunch of other Imperials in front of right. him, because I feel like he says those lines to affect other people. And Krennic's good. He just choked him. He's, you know, that and the fact that there's, to me, a difference between snark and the direct wordplay. But a discussion for another time. I'm so positive about most things. Every once in a while, I like to focus on a tiny thing that I have a small problem with. So people don't call me a shill. There, I don't like that one line. Okay. But the line I do like and is related is the, we would be honored if you would join us, right?
Yes, right.
That drives home the, oh, did you think you were sitting down for a nice meal after being chased across the galaxy? And like, obviously Vader wouldn't say this, but the implication is we would be honored if you would join us, not for dinner, but torture.
I love it. No. Oh.
Big steaming bowl of pain. We would be honored if you would join us for me beating the hell out of you emotionally, you know?
Our first course is suffering.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have this thought here too, going into more some maybe silly headcanon. So we got Lando afterwards, maybe coming back and having some reflections over leftover dinner. Before that, in this day, you got Boba Fett hiding around the corner, probably just giggling in his own Fett way. Like, I'm going to pop out. I'll pop out, right? I got the spurs shaking. get in the corner. No disintegrations. I, in my head, I like that deep down inside, the tormented monster that is Vader is having some Anakin flashbacks to that dinner with Padme in Attack of Clones, where he's looking at some of that fruit and thinking about slicing it in two and floating it over to Padme. Where it's just, he's at that dinner table and he's just like, this is what I've become. So I must double down on it. I'm going to double down on it right here. And that's not even he doesn't even know who Leia is, right? He doesn't know the relation and the power that is. But I just think in his mind, I want that art piece of Vader sitting at the table in Empire and just a dreamy do-do-do-do-do-do vision of him passing fruit to Padme.
Oh, man, that's so sad. And I'm focusing on Vader's attitude toward Solo, because I think he would, I think he probably has even a little bit more respect for Leia of like, you know, she's a strategist and, you know, a politician and a freedom fighter. And I hear her good propaganda that she's getting out across the galaxy. So like, I think he's happy to capture her, you know, but I think there's something about like, I have a little respect for her evading me. It pisses me off so much that this, scrum rat from Corellia has been running circles around me.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and you know, that hunk of junk that I think by this time Vader's seen some of the hollows, and that's the ship that came out of the sky, so to speak, and knocked me and the TIE fighters out. Okay, I'm gonna get you.
Right. Yeah, and I do think it is. We have to talk about one pivotal moment in the scene. Hmm. Vader sits down right at the end, and I think that is what really gets the idea. Like, do they have dinner? Does he make them sit down, or just? He sit down while the stormtroopers come and put him in binders and carry him off, and he just watches. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, he's not going to take out the mask and chow down there, but there could be just some celebration kind of smile underneath that. He's just kind of sitting there watching.
Yeah, this is my real joke answer. It's funny to think of it as an awkward dinner scene, and with the family jokes of so you want to date my daughter, all that kind of thing. Obviously he doesn't know that then. But the comedy idea that amuses me now is, Vader sits down, he makes them sit down. And then there's some dinner theater. There's like a real cheesy murder mystery where they have to, write down their guesses of who did it. And they have to do all this with Vader.
This is what I want. I want some, a nice, performing, Ugnaught comes out, maybe a droid, I think it's great.
Yeah. We would be honored if you would join us for dinner theater. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on this one?
I got to say something. I saw this question today. I was like, this is great. This is great. I wonder how long we'll go on this. We are going right where we need to be. We got a lot of this. Great
question. Watch that. That'll be the longest time we take on questions, even though we have some deep ones, some good ones, some really deep ones. We're going to move on to our next question from Twitter. This comes to us from Daniel Zarlik. Daniel says, hi, FC friends. A while ago, Filoni said he had a specific story in mind with Ahsoka for years. Now that our show is coming out, he's able to make this come true. So let's have fun with it. What do you think is Filoni's story? Daniel continues. One thing comes to mind for me, Ahsoka getting an apprentice. This would rhyme with Anakin not wanting to teach her at first and then growing to be a better Jedi with her. She first rejected to teach Grogu, but she might have a change of heart in her show. Maybe some of the new cast is Ahsoka's apprentice. That'd be fun. What do you think about this potential story? What other stories would Filoni have in mind? Sorry for the long post, and may the Force be with you. No apologies for the long post. Thank you for threatening the tweets so they were easy for me to find. Love this. Love the question and the theorizing. So, Ken, where do you go with this? Let's talk big picture first, and then we'll get down to the specifics that Daniel's throwing out about a possible apprentice story. What do you have any sort of either thoughts, guesses, or just hopes about what you would like this Ahsoka story to be that Filoni's had in mind for so many years?
Yeah, I think I do have less to say on this than the Empire dinner scene. I don't think about it. Look, I don't mean this to be jokey, but it's like, I guess this all leads to Ahsoka moving to Mortis, right? That just seems like where we're going. She's going to pack up some Convor cages and head to Mortis. But I you know, at the end of the day, I don't think that's the answer. I do not mean this snarky, but Dave and Ahsoka and the protectiveness of the character is very clear and very it is known, as they would say. Game of Thrones. I see it being a story justifying her path in a way. Every decision she made, more of the approach to the Jedi way versus what the Jedi Order was, and there's a little bit of Ahsoka was correct, but maybe now instead of just celebrating that I was correct. Where she is now and the search for Ezra, all that kind of stuff, we'll see where it lays out. But just taking her powers to help others in the galaxy, I don't see it as any kind of retirement to Mortis, but like a transformation. Like, she's got this personal mandate to go forward with someone alone, might be the details, but to continue to help, like what she feels the Jedi are, and doesn't need a temple, doesn't need an order. Maybe she stops off, she knows them, she meditates, she hangs out with Luke, all that kind of stuff, great. But like, I need my place is out there. And it's going to continue to be out there. And that's what I want to go do. Almost like riding into the sunset, but continuing to help people on the other side of the horizon.
Yeah. No, I really like that. And I do feel like, I know it's been said a lot by me, by many other people, I do feel like Ahsoka's going to end up in Mortis, but and that almost sounds like, you know, we've talked about enough, it can sound like a joke. Throw her in Mortis. Right. That's where she needs to end up. But honestly, like, pulling back, I don't know if that's necessarily where this first season is going, because I just kind of feel like this season might be about some other stuff, and there might still be that kind of big crossover event with the Mandoverse, and I feel like the end of her journey on this mortal plane might be heading to Mortis, but I don't know if that's the next story we're going to get. So I think that's where it's headed in the big picture eventually someday. And I think just to reconnect with the heart of that, you look at all the great ideas that were in the Mortis arc, that these beings had reached this level of understanding of the Force and power where they could help control, you know, keeping everything in balance. It was truly this service to the galaxy, right? In everything that Ahsoka learns about being a Jedi and reinforces about the Jedi is that this idea of, well, where I exist as a Jedi to help people. That's the point, you know. It isn't glory. It isn't winning some ultimate cosmic war battle. It's just help people. Then you go with, like, you know, this is something that Filoni's been involved in since the beginning, that this is a place where Ahsoka touched darkness, where she was corrupted there, right? She felt the worst of what the dark side could be. She was selflessly saved by the daughter. And then, you know, the Convor connection, the Convor More in particular, doesn't show up until Rebels. It is associated with the daughter because it's on various illustrations of the Mortis gods where More is connected to the daughter. So, like, that to me isn't a random, like, you know, super deep cut. It's Ahsoka was given her life back by the life force of the daughter. And then there's this bird that may represent her that's clearly a friend and aid. You know, Ahsoka says something along the lines of, you know, they've, you know, helped me, they've saved my life. Moray is important, not just an Easter egg. And it feels like a thread of a story. So how and when Ahsoka met Moray, what Ahsoka's understanding of what Moray, the Convor, truly is, all that seems like fertile storytelling, not just Easter egg stuff, not just clues to her eventual fate, but story. How Ahsoka feels about the nature of the Force, her connection to the daughter, what the daughter means, you know, what the light side means, is all rich storytelling stuff. And then one other big picture thing about the Mortis stuff, I was really affected in my rewatch of Rebels, getting to see everything in a compact way, that this big idea that the idea of finding your place isn't like everybody's destined for one specific thing and just do that, stay locked in. It's a matter of Ahsoka compliments Kanan by saying he found where he was, where and when he was needed the most, and he gave everything to help. And I think that's like an ethos that's really developing with Ahsoka of, you know, her journey in Clone Wars season 7, where it's like, I don't know who I want to be. I don't know what the Jedi mean to me. Like, oh, well, I just want to help people. She helped people for years as Fulcrum in little ways, in whatever way she could. So this idea of like, wherever she ends up is probably going to be, where can I help most? Maybe that's Mortis, because I just want to find the place where I can help the most.
You're doing a great job of selling it to someone like me who, as I don't mean it jokey at all, but just like, I don't know, I guess she goes to Mortis just means that's could end up of just, again, the why of it. And that's the thing. And sometimes I poke a little fun at the man in the cowboy hat, but I just think Dave understands that stuff and he understands his character so much. And I do like that he's protective of it. And I do love that he has the potential here to take this story home, so to speak, to drive it to the end he's designed. So, and it could, and all that about the why of Mortis, right? Versus just some crazy space planet that no one really knows anything about. Just like why that exists, why George put it in there, why the team of Clone Wars put it in there, the world between worlds connections, Moray, Convors, all that stuff. Yeah, it's not surface level. And so I think if we end up hitting that direction, it'll be very earned, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious about that in the big picture. But like I said, maybe we'll get some, Moray stuff. You know, Moray was physically seen in Mandalorian, you know, so maybe we'll get some sort of flashback to that relationship. But for me, I think the story, the emotional story of the Ahsoka season that I'm interested in, I think is a good possibility, is just that this idea of healing, you know. Ahsoka lost everything when she left the Jedi Order, and then she kind of lost everything again when she ended up stranded, I think, on Malachor. She wasn't there, you know, for Anakin to help save him. She promised to find Ezra. She seems really determined in her first appearance in Mandalorian season 2 to find Ezra. I think she's probably still wrestling with everything that he became, wrestling with being alone for a really long time. I think there's a possibility that, you know, she does commune or connect with the spirit of Anakin in some way. Maybe we'll see her meet Luke for the first time. Maybe we'll see her really driven by needing to help Ezra and put that Rebels family back together again. And all those ideas, all those kind of what if plot points, to me, add up to an idea of healing. So that's the story that I'm curious to see if that will develop in this first season.
Yeah, no, that's just seeing her interactions with Din versus interactions with Luke, and that you know, there's a lot of stuff happens emotionally between those two moments. It seems like you and I have always been waiting to have that Luke conversation, that kind of stuff. Yeah, healing, that works for me. And overall, just from a almost surface level to Daniel's question, I was like, I see Filoni having to tell a story that makes us understand why she wasn't around and didn't join the fight. Those questions we have that are a little bit playground questions that maybe sometimes might miss the thematic points of all of this. And also maybe he now has to answer why we hear her in Rise of Skywalker. Sorry, Dave, you're going to have to deal with that one, right? what are you going to do? But all that is driven by what you're talking about, or driven by what maybe the end result could be, this, what I'm talking about, this transformation into going out and helping and not being bound by this. And as we can talk a little bit more directly about some of the stuff Daniel's talking about and asking here. But yeah, that's why I kind of rebuffed the idea of an apprentice.
Not
to debate it, but just like, it almost, it would make sense. Hey, come with me on the galaxy, but almost like, not hinder. That seems kind of rude to apprentices around the galaxy, but you know what I mean? Of just like not what she's there for.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to have her be kind of torn about it. You know, I think I think Ezra's probably too far along in his journey to become her apprentice, right? Yeah. I think, you know, possibly one of the stories that Dave has in mind is after she finds out what happened to Anakin, you know, that she has to come back to what does it mean to be a Jedi now? Like, I found who I needed to be during the dark times. I was Fulcrum. I helped where I could. I helped bring people together. Now that this Galactic Civil War is over, who do I want to be? What do I want to be? You know, and I think Filoni has said some things that hint at this. You just said it. I think that something has happened to her in between when we see her in The Mandalorian season 2 and when we see her in Book of Boba Fett. She seems in a much better place.
Yes,
for sure. Meeting Luke, right? Probably, I think, having a better understanding of what happened to Anakin. So I think that there is the possibility that we're going to see her at the beginning of the Ahsoka show, which sounds like a variety show. It's the Ahsoka show, in a little bit of that darker place. And that would be really fascinating to see if she encounters somebody who's like, I'm force sensitive. It's, you know, I'm not going to be hunted for it anymore, but I don't, who do I go to? You know, if Ahsoka hasn't met Luke yet and know about his school and somebody comes to her and says, I need your help, and she doesn't really want to do it, you know, that could be a really interesting dynamic that she's not comfortable being like, yes, I am a trainer of the Jedi. I'll restart the Jedi Order, but also I can't say no to helping this person. That could be an interesting relationship.
Absolutely. I know the timeline of the Ahsoka series, there's, and ever since the end of Rebels, there's some questions that we have yet to get answered for. So, but her seeing her and spending a little time with her before she really knows or understands who Luke is or even where he is or any of those, there's something about that I like about learning that or moving towards that, just getting that answer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a while back when Tales of the Jedi came out and people had their very valid and understandable concerns about the revision of Ahsoka's story from the novel and, you know, not including some crucial characters, that was all a very important conversation. There was a pretty long interview with Filoni, I believe, on Nerdist, and some of the quotes about the Tales of the Jedi stuff really echoed out, understandably. But he says some pretty clear stuff in that article, too, about Ahsoka's timeline isn't maybe exactly what you think it is. Wait for the show. Some really interesting stuff there. So if people are really excited about this, I think that's a good interview to track down for the fun speculation.
Indeed.
All right. Are we ready to take a quick break, Ken? Should we go to Vader's dining room for a second?
We should go to commercial Mortis.
Okay, let's go. We pitch to Mortis for a forced commercial back in a moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we are back with our ongoing question of, can we talk about each question exactly as long as we talked about the Vader dining room on Cloud City? We're going to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. Go first to Brian Babcock. Brian says, hello, Ken and Joseph. We've all been hearing stirrings of a season 2 of Obi-Wan Kenobi happening. Of course, nothing confirmed or announced yet, so speculating responsibly. I'm curious what you would want to see in another season of Kenobi. I feel it would be difficult to do Obi-Wan versus Vader again. Though their stories are so intertwined, it would also be difficult not to include Vader. I was thinking it might be interesting to have Obi-Wan facing off against Maul. Perhaps he meets and joins forces with Kira, and they oust Maul from his seat of power. While I love the animation side of Star Wars and by no means consider it less than, I remember being a bit bummed out that Maul didn't get much focus in the Twin Suns episode of Rebels. Given that was the end of his story, I'd have liked to have seen him have a bit more of an arc. I'd love to know your thoughts. Thanks for reading, and as always, may the Force be with you. This is a great question. This is like a great little nesting doll of questions. There's a big picture question about season 2 of Obi-Wan, but then some fun stuff in here about Vader's appearance in a second season and about Maul's arc in Rebels. So, Ken, where would you like to start?
Wonderful way to look at it. We're cracking open the eggs here, pulling out a lot of things here. I do agree that another round with Maul and Kira and all that world have great potential to learn more there. As far as the Maul and the Rebels thing, I think, and Brian's been a wonderful long time listener here. I think that's a great, it gives me pause to think I've never thought about it in those terms because I've been satisfied. I think, and I don't mean this to fight Brian's words, but I think the fact that Maul doesn't necessarily have an arc, like almost like a literally like he has a straight line is part of him, mm-hmm. part of what he is. And so I think I felt I got enough from it, but also he turned into such a dynamic, interesting character in so many ways. A lot of lessons to learn from him. So I'd be fine with that there. That's where I start first. And then we can move into some of the Vader stuff there, but curious about your thoughts and Maul and Twin Suns and all that too.
Yeah, I really agree with Brian. I think I was really thinking about that on my Rebels rewatch. It was one of those times it was great to have already known where it was going. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get distracted by sort of the mystery and the question. For me, the way Maul is presented in Rebels is he's great. He's dynamic and funny and surprising and scary and all these wonderful things. Yeah. But when you start to break down everything that's going on with him, is like we are meeting him when he is just broken and has nothing left. He's got like this, we know he's had this ambition of a list, right? Revenge on Palpatine, revenge on Vader and the Sith, and building up my crime lord power and having all my power back and being a major force in the galaxy. And then also revenge on Obi-Wan and all the big things. have been chipped away.
Mm-hmm.
And when you first watch Rebels, and you don't know exactly what he's after, you can wonder if he's after some bigger things. But it gets stripped away because he's not coming for Palpatine. He mm-hmm. doesn't have a crime syndicate. He's not trying to build one. Maybe he's manipulating Ezra, but he just says, I can't take Vader alone. And you realize, even though he's massively dynamic in Rebels as a character, that his story is, I have nothing left mm-hmm. but this empty, pathetic last check mark on my bucket list. Mm-hmm. I've lived my whole life for vengeance. I'm not willing to turn away from that. I got to get vengeance on Kenobi. That's the only thing I'm existing for. So in one way I get like, yeah, he doesn't have much of an arc, but I think that's also the point, is he has nothing left but the most empty and pathetic thing on his bucket list, which is just kill this one guy in my entire life will have been justified.
And it all comes to a head in that moment where he's like, you know, look what you are, desert rat. I forget the exact quote. And Kenobi's mm-hmm. like, look what I've risen above. I think that's the crux of everything you're talking about in my mind right then and there. By the way, folks, if you want to get more on this, we did a Force Center scene by scene episode. search and find it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another part of it to me is I always felt like Maul is like really like, is violent and horrible and sad, like strangely likable in Rebels, because he keeps calling Ezra his apprentice and is so sure that he can tempt him to the dark side. And some of that is for Ezra's storytelling mm-hmm. sake.
Yeah.
But I also just get the picture that like Maul is lonely, you know, and he doesn't want Ezra out of some grand, like, I will train him and together we will overthrow Vader. It's more just like, I'd like a vengeance buddy because I'm real lonely.
A vengeance buddy. My buddy, my vengeance buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vengeance buddy.
Google that commercial, younger people. My buddy doll, my vengeance. And I don't think it's like, I don't think he's aware of it, of like, yes, I'm, mm-hmm. I am quite lonely and it'd be great if Ezra became my apprentice. But it's, yeah. you know, but yeah. I feel it. I feel like he's lonely. It's sad. Everything about it's sad.
Yeah. Very sad.
Yeah, so I guess that all of that opinions about his arc in Rebels is to say, I do feel like there is like a big story arc to be had with him that leaves him on Malachor and leaves him with kind of nothing much left but finding Kenobi and getting him. And so I would love to see the story of how he loses Crimson Dawn and how he falls. Mm-hmm. First choice, big budget movie with Amelia Clark is yeah. Kira. You know, I think I'm on the fence about whether I want Obi-Wan involved in that or not, or if that's Kira in Maul's story, you know, or even if Obi-Wan's presence makes it less Maul's story. And I feel like I would really like his final fall from Crimson Dawn to be Maul's story. Mm-hmm. So thinking about what's the right place to make sure that Maul has that focus.
Yeah, for my money, and it's leading into the next maybe part of the discussion, but I like the idea of Kenobi not being involved, because when Maul shows up in Rebels, it's almost like Kenobi's like, oh, that's right, you. And Maul has been like, it's been you every second of my life. And, oh, yeah, how you doing? I forgot. What you doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the fun thing about Maul is Obi-Wan reckoning with how many arch enemies he's made, of like, oh yeah, I focus so much on how much I failed Vader and why he hates me so much. I forgot you hate me too, just as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not that I wouldn't want to see Obi-Wan and Maul together yeah. in some way, but also the Twin Sons episode is so great in terms of their relationship in that end. That I'd be open for a how Maul lost Crimson Dawn story that involves Obi-Wan, but I wouldn't want it to become about Obi-Wan so that it can be Maul's yeah. story.
Agree.
All right, so let's talk about season two of Obi-Wan Kenobi. If there was a season two, what would you want it to be, and how would you want Vader to factor in, if at all?
See, this is, I've been, since Kenobi season, the Kenobi season wrapped up, I've been all about season two. And this great question from Brian made me question myself on that. Because everything I'm thinking of, I don't know if it works as a show. It works as more of a poem than a show. So I'll start here. I I agree. I don't want to put words into Brian's mouth here with this question here, but I agree going back to Vader would almost seem like going to the well one too many times for me. Yet I also think that the emotions aren't necessarily over for Vader. That last moment with Palpatine, he's certainly lying to his boss or trying to convince himself that no, Kenobi means nothing. And, you know, Palpatine's happy with the answer, or at least in the moment. But where on the flip side is, I think Kenobi has clearly gotten to a place of peace with Vader. So I don't know how well it would work that they're in each other's orbit again. And I know a lot of people might have not another fight and all that kind of stuff. And that's something you'd have to think about before you do it. So I'll start there, but I want the show to be a slow roasted meditation, like a Qui-Gon teaching them how to reach the other side, but both of them having maybe some reflection on what went wrongs and conversations, what the future is like. And you had mentioned it with Soka and Kanan. I'm glad you mentioned that, of just Kenobi really learning and confirming about knowing your place in the story. Thinking again of the twin sons moment when Ezra shows up and Kenobi's like, you're not supposed to be here, which was almost like Kenobi talking to the audience like, no, we know Luke's the, you know, part of the Chosen One game with his dad. And that's Luke's story. And Ezra as a Jedi can exist because his story's not here. And I think just Kenobi getting a little bit more clued. He's more clued into the galaxy now, right? He's been out and about. He stopped carving whale meat or shark meat, and he's very aware, if he wasn't already, but he can't ignore the problems going on in the galaxy, but he has to learn or has to keep on the path of this is where I belong. And this is how I can help everyone is be here with Luke. And so I don't know, maybe he'd feel the need to run out again and all this stuff. And all this to say though, Joseph, where's the conflict, the action, the villain, the episodes? I'm pitching a campsite conversation with Qui-Gon that might not be the most dynamic television program.
Yeah, no, I agree with a ton of what you're saying. I think for myself, I absolutely love the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I don't necessarily need Vader and Obi-Wan to come into conflict again.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, you highlighted it really well. I love it that Obi-Wan finds a way to move forward. That it will always be a wound, but he can't let that wound hold him back, right? Of what happened to Vader. Vader made his choice, and Anakin's gone. And Vader's conversation with Palpatine is borderline comedy, right? When Vader's like, we'll destroy anything in our path. We will get Kenobi. And then Palpatine's like, should you though? And he's like, you know, you're right. We shouldn't at all. No, never mind everything I just said. No, forget about it. You're right. No, he means nothing to me. Yeah. I was just kind of saying, maybe if you wanted to destroy everything in pursuit of Kenobi, I could be up for that too. So I would be, it was so great to see Vader. The voice technology worked for me. That's a whole other conversation, but it worked for me. It was great to see Hayden in the suit, all those things. I would be almost interested in a season two where they don't interact, but maybe Vader almost has like a B story of his own that is mirroring whatever's going on with Kenobi in some interesting way.
I actually glad you said that. I had that idea of just like, can it just now be not a sitcom, but one of those shows where over, or even like Game of Thrones, we got Daenerys is over in Westeros or Essos. Can we just have Vader in the hallways working through his problems?
And they've done sorry, go ahead.
No, they don't need to meet. They're in the same orbit, you know?
Yeah, and they've done so much great storytelling with Vader in the comics, and I think that there are a lot of stories to tell with with his adventures, and it'd be great to see some of, not necessarily a comic adaptation, but some of those kinds of adventures, the constant need to prove himself, prove his devotion to the dark side, and recommit to it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
him being put through yet another test by Palpatine to recommit to the dark side to prove himself would be an interesting contrast to, I think if there is a second season of Obi-Wan, I would want to see his journey to learn to become one with the Force, right? Mm. Because I feel like that is, you know, it's been talked about in various interviews with all the different writers who worked on Obi-Wan, that at one point the, you know, original screenwriter of the film version wanted it to be a trilogy. And I think that door is left open by, you know, Qui-Gon saying, you know, we've got a long way to go. You know, he doesn't mean physically to like, I picked out a hut for you to live in. Picked out a cabin. I picked out a desert cabin. I think it is much more about you have opened the door back up to being a Jedi, to feeling the light side, to having the Force, you know, course through you and be a part of your life. Now you need to go through all of this work to understand yourself, forgive yourself, prepare yourself to be totally selfless, to become one with the Force. And I think, it is, when you pitch it, it can absolutely sound like, yeah, I just want like a meditation video where just an hour of Ewan McGregor, you know, legs folded, sitting peacefully, maybe he floats in the air every once in a while. It's like watching, you know, a train video or a fireside video at the holidays. We just watch Obi-Wan meditate. But as you and I have talked about before, that great Clone Wars arc in season 6, where Yoda goes on an active journey to physical places and metaphysical places. I think that's what kind of opened up the story, is that Kenobi deciding like, yes, I need to be here for Luke, but also I just need to let him grow up. He's got parents that protect him. I don't need to be hovering over him right now. I have a little freedom to move about the galaxy. Obviously, you have to be careful not to be caught as a Jedi. But that idea of, you know, he's having a hard time of letting go of a part of his past, and Qui-Gon sends him physically somewhere to go do something to help him process through it. Maybe he does encounter Maul. Maybe you get kind of the best of both worlds, where he goes on some dream quests with Vader and Maul on either shoulder. telling him why he is awful and, you know, does not deserve to call himself a Jedi, you know? And then within that, you've sent him out in the galaxy. You could get him into actual physical, you know, scrapes, not all just metaphysical, but all of it in the emotional journey to become the person he needs to be by the time of the Twin Suns episode of Rebels.
Yeah. Big final link in that story chain for me.
Yeah. How do you feel about the possibility? Like, I feel like there's the Obi-Wan Kenobi show is just a weird temperature check. I feel like people were really excited about it. It was coming out. There was some criticism. There's some people who just didn't want Obi-Wan and Vader to meet. So there's those people, it was never going to be for them, and that's just fine. But I feel like there was such excitement about it. And then I feel like that excitement has kind of dulled down to like not as much. What is your temperature check on the fandom for wanting more Obi-Wan?
That's a great one, because, you know, trying to sift through the snark and sift through the, you know, people using their love of Andor against shows like this, which got me particularly angry at times, a little dark side energy for me over that there. So I don't know the honest thing, but I can tell you myself, I mentioned it, but even this question has made me think that I might be more okay with just one season than I would have thought even a couple months ago. If there's a second one, I'm going to be front and center, you know, as quick as I can get there, for it. But I don't know. That's a fair question. Maybe something, we can ask of the fans, but, I don't know what your experiences are. Cause even like I keep mentioning on the news show, I was talking about running into comics at comedy clubs who have strong Star Wars opinions. It's about Mando and Boba Fett or Andor, the sequels, Kenobi, good or bad. And I'm saying it's like an indifference. It just doesn't come up as much.
No, I mean, I feel like it was like a slam dunk with those criticisms and caveats. But there was such excitement and, you know, there was talk about a second season in that.
So yeah.
It's interesting to see, you know, where does that land? Disney's trying to make sure that Disney Plus is profitable. Does Obi-Wan help with that? I think for myself, I'd be very happy if it is just this season, because it was beautiful. But especially if it was really different, really, really different. If it wasn't, whoops, Obi-Wan runs into Vader again. But if it was taking some of the metaphysical weirdness that we've seen in the animated side and pushing that even farther in live action, something truly, truly different and truly its own thing, I'd be really excited for it.
I mean, God, can you imagine seeing what are they, the Wills or whatever that Yoda ran
Force Priestesses?
Force Priestesses in live action?
Yeah.
That'd be wonderful.
I would love it. I might be alone, but I would love it. We'll see.
We might be. Well, Force Analyst is probably with us, but yeah, it would be. You would definitely hear about it in Comedy Store or Green Rooms.
Excellent. All right, our final question is from Andrew McNabb. Andrew says, hello, figure fighters. Thank you for the reference to our YouTube show. Do you think there is irredeemable evil in Star Wars? Do you prefer the cut and dryness of that with some characters? Palpatine obviously springs to mind. Do you ever think there could be a story that doesn't necessarily make us sympathize with him, but does make us understand what's behind the cackle, behind the unlimited power? We watched Anakin murder the young and the innocent, and while no one should ever be able to justify that, when we see his upbringing, his trauma, his torment, the ruminations, the cracks in his helmet, we can't help but feel a sliver of sympathy. Could we ever see that for Sheev, or has he crossed the line too many times? Is no one truly ever really gone? Thank you for always being both entertaining and insightful, a powerful combination. Thank you, Andrew. Ken, let's get into this. There's a couple ways to look at it. Where do you start?
Well, I'll start here. I do think there's irredeemable evil in Star Wars, and I'm looking at you, Pong Krell. All right? You know what you did. You know what you did. Yeah, I do think there's irredeemable evil, excuse me, and it's always been a Palpatine for me. It's always been a Palpatine for me. And that's coming from someone, and you included, I'm pulling you in, Joseph, where we collect Palpatine merch.
Oh, yeah. I'm staring at a couple Palpatines, and they're staring back as I sit here.
Yeah, to be clear about that. That's where I'll start. I say yes, and then we'll go into some details.
Yeah, I think for me, there's two ways to look at irredeemable. There's what is in the person's heart, and could the person change and want to be a different person?
Yes.
And then there's the acts taken by an individual where a society could choose to say, hey, great that you decided to be better, but we can't forgive you or show you mercy based on the acts that you committed. There's the internal and the external, right? There's can the person change in their heart, and how does society embrace them if they do?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. It's something we have to deal with in our own lives probably constantly.
Yes. Absolutely. So I think, and maybe that's where sometimes the sort of like, even using the word redemption for Anakin can get murky, because we're talking about Anakin, the person made a better choice, finally turned away from darkness. Should society go, hey, you know what? All's cool, Vader. Thanks for sending Palpatine down the shaft.
Right.
You know, all is forgiven, right? So I think, for me, I like really need to separate it out those ways. For the personal, for the soul of the characters, I don't think there's irredeemable evil in Star Wars. I think that's one of the biggest messages of Star Wars, that there aren't people who are born just virtuous and full of light and people born full of darkness. There are people who make choices. We all go through pain. We all go through trauma. Some people much worse. And we respond to those wounds either by trying to move past them and contribute to ourselves and to our society, or we give in to that wound and lash out and inflict it on other people. We either believe that we are all stronger together, or believe that the entire world is a game and everybody's out to get you. And so the only logical thing to do is to try to get all the power so you can get them. And I think that's the dark side. And I think that Sheev is our ultimate evil, because I think there is some story. I think something happened to him. I think some wound happened to him. It could just be mean parents on Naboo. Who knows? It doesn't have to be like one dramatic thing, but I think something wounded him. He chose the dark side. And what makes him different from a lot of the characters we've met is there's nothing's ever going to get through to him to make a different choice. Vader, people can get through to. Kylo Ren, people can get through to. Asajj made a different choice. Reva made a different choice. Sheev is a character. Sheev is a person who was wounded, who made a choice, and no one's going to get through to him. He made his choice. He is not going to redeem himself. That's how I feel about Sheev. I don't know that I need to see the story. That Darth Plagueis novel had some young Sheev stuff that, to my recollection, kind of just portrayed him as he was always a little off. Doesn't make him super sympathetic. In my mind, he has a sympathetic backstory. I don't need to see it, but what makes him different is, even though we could understand, I understand how you felt really bad and how you'd be tempted to the dark side, but what makes your character is you will never choose to move away from that.
Yeah. No, oh, I love all this stuff. First of all, you really did a great job describing dark side stuff in Star Wars as either get to getting or get got. That's how the Sith view it.
Yep.
So that's kind of what it is. No, I love this. I think that this could be a series that is it's the path to being an irredeemable evil, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, cause I do think it's about choice. I would love a series or look into Palpatine. It for me personally can run up a little bit against the idea of sharing too much of the story. I think you're expecting some of that too, and just saying, hey, I don't necessarily need to see this, but I would, you know, if I know that's this is a little bit about his backstory, but I don't know if I just need to spend time with it. Cause I just kind of like looking anytime Palpatine's on screen, Sheev, Emperor, or otherwise, I just know that he's made some choices and he's not moving back from it, which is what it's about. Because I think there could be great value in a young Palps ruins the day Star Wars series.
But if it's called that, yeah.
But it would be, I would want it to be, I should say, about those choices that we talk about and we celebrate in Star Wars, because it would have to be about making the wrong ones and then knowingly never turning back. And you're touching upon that. I put down this idea in my head of Star Wars. If Star Wars is the morality tale, we all say it is. And I always say, you know, I view the world of Game of Thrones as, hey, here's how the world is, and Star Wars is here's how the world could be. And that's kind of the dividing line where I don't need to have as much sympathy for the bad guys in Star Wars as I maybe get from other worlds, including Game of Thrones. But all that to say, Star Wars is a morality tale, then a complete fall could be a part of that tale. A series showing you, just simply showing you Sheev's side wouldn't work for me. It shouldn't be glorifying his rise to power. Could it be a political thriller? And so, yes, it absolutely could. That might be what you'd want out of, you know, young senator gets the election. Yes. But it should be, I don't know if this makes sense, Joseph, but it should be perhaps the emotional equivalent of what Andor did for those who kind of like the Empire. It hit a lot of people. You've seen a lot of that online of after watching Andor going, oh, this is bad. They're bad. I get it in a way I didn't get before.
Yeah.
And I think you and I would argue that that's present in a lot of other Star Wars storytelling, but Andor did it in a wonderful way of going, hey, look at this. If you could do that with a Palpatine series, hey, don't be rooting for him. Don't look for his side of the coin. This is how he fell and decided to stay there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you know, the dark side and the light side are you know, they are metaphors, right? And you don't have to be a Force user to fall to the dark or the light. And I think Dead Ramiro is kind of a great example of what you're talking about, where we saw some of the things that she was going through, and we can kind of empathize with them of, you know, being looked down on, being told to stay inside your lane, you know, that feeling we all have when we know we're onto something, we know we're right. And then the powers that be won't listen to us, like, and got us to sympathize with her and understand maybe why she took some of the actions, and then showed us the absolute horror of what she does, right? Mm-hmm. To separate out the idea of we can in the real world often understand why somebody makes a really bad choice, but we can't go along with the choice. You know, we can have empathy for the person, but say that the thing you're doing, you can't do and needs to be stopped in some, you know, in some form.
Yeah. That's a great example. And part of the victory of that show Andor, because it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think for me, what you and I have been talking about is in my mind, a lot of, what I'll call internal. Like, I don't think she was born evil. I think he made choices. And then I think he made the very bad choice to never step back from those awful choices that inflicted pain on others for his own benefit. But then there's this part of Andrew's question also that is more the external of, could he ever be forgiven? Should Vader be forgiven as a figure? I think that goes back to our conversations of, you know, what if Ben Solo lived and sheepishly got out of Rey's X-Wing? Is like, look, I know I got some things to apologize for. Like, in that, we kind of joke about it, but that really real question of, can Finn forgive him? Should Finn forgive him? And there's a difference between forgiveness and mercy of, like, I'm just going to... I don't necessarily forgive you, but I'm going to show you mercy, you know, and I'm not going to try to punish you for what you have done. I can't forgive you, but I will show you mercy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that just gets into like very complex. I don't know how to talk about that without talking about the real world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And I know you have a lot of life experiences wrestling with these kind of issues with, you know, the role of law enforcement and security and that in our lives in that balance. So how do you wrestle with that, the external idea of what is redeemable or not in Star Wars?
How do I wrestle with it? I'm trying to pull it apart from real world things of, I don't know. I go with where the choices lead you, and then where do your actions go, and then how much like in your scenario, and I've talked. I remember on Collider talking about this. Like, I would love to see Ben redeemed. That seemed where we were headed, but like him having to deal with it. The lesson in that is more for those around Ben than him, right? The journey part up to that is more of his lesson than he makes his choice, and he's still got some things to learn. But how do we react it there? And there's no clear cut answer. But so how does Star Wars boil it down to this morality tale? Forgiveness versus mercy is a great way to look at it. The difference there. What are your actions saying about your choices? You made this choice. You proclaimed this, but what are you actually doing? And I don't know. It's case by case. I'm struggling to answer a little bit because I'm still working through it in my own life with some folks.
Yeah. You know? No. I
it's
think
tough.
So
I almost want Star Wars to teach me.
I think for me, and with huge, huge caveat that it gets into real world issues, which I'll try not to get too far down. But for me, what is most important is when somebody, for whatever reasons, maybe even understandable reasons of being really hurt, makes a bad choice and lashes out and starts hurting other people. The most important thing for the benefit of our society is that they stop hurting people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I care the most about. Right. Mm-hmm. Kylo Ren needed to be stopped. Either, you know, absolute last resort violence, right. To stop somebody else from continuing to commit violence. Best case scenario, somebody gets through to him and he makes a better choice. But if he lands there, on Agent Kloss, he's not hurting people anymore. Then we get into a philosophical question of like, do we need to punish somebody who has stopped hurting? Do we want to punish for the sake of punishing? And that's where it just to me gets into like, yeah, I haven't had enough cups of coffee. I'm not going to get into the real world, but just as like, that's how I think through it. Right. What is the philosophy? Does he need to be punished or does he need to stop hurting people? What's the imperative of of society's relationship with Ben Solo, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's deep for a Friday morning here.
Yep. Yeah. And especially with Star Wars, this is why it's kind of like, you know, it's a big myth, right? And we're talking about things in the real world that would be like, yeah, of course, if you were involved in an authoritarian government that, you know, destroyed, you know, caused destruction on the level of like the Hosnian cataclysm. Yeah, I'm not saying I'd just be like, are you making better choices? Well, come on over. Yeah. Like, it is extremely complex in one of the, you know, extremely complex and deep but you pull it apart and go talk about lessons. And I think that's the power of Star Wars. We can look at this and compare it to like an actual leader of a government, right? Should that leader be welcomed back into society? And then we can think about on a real personal level of this person in my life who hurt me, you know, can I forgive them and let them back in my life? Or is that going to risk hurting them again? You can kind of look at it on these very different scales.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Yeah, and Star Wars, the benefit of it is that it's allowed to go like, hey, we're dealing with space sagas, so we can go to the bare bones lessons here. You know, real world, you know, Kylo survives. He might spend some time in jail for me. You know?
War crimes. Out of mind, clinker time for Kylo Ren.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit.
A little slammer time for Kylo Ren. Yeah, yeah. I think Ben would be okay with that. I don't think Ben would put up much of a disagreement on that one.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. I think. Thanks for letting me dance sort of the edge of talking about much larger things. But I think at the end of the day, for me, the biggest thing is I think Star Wars is a morality tale about we are all tempted to the dark side often, and it is hard to make the choice against it. And what is meaningful in Anakin and Ben's stories is that they succeed in this incredibly difficult task of stopping and making better choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
And sorry. Don't.
Sorry. I cut you off there.
No. And Jeeve doesn't. That's it for me. Do you have any other thoughts on this one?
No, I need to go some lunch with some friends.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I figured out.
All right. So to bring us home, we've got another Power of the Light Side entry. This is a call that we put out to patrons on Patreon if they'd like to share something joyful about Star Wars. Every once in a while, we do get a little bit of a longer essay. And every once in a while, we do get somebody kind of working through the darkness to get back to the light. And that's what we have today. Ken, are you ready for this?
I am ready.
All right, this comes to us from John Webster. John says, "Dear Joseph, Ken, and Jennifer, I want to begin this message by thanking you guys for being a force of positivity in the Star Wars fandom. For so long, it feels like I've had to fight for my right to simply love Star Wars with no strings attached. And in this age of social media, it seems harder than ever. Force Center has been a light in the darkness, and you guys truly deserve all the props in the world." Thank you very much, John. That is very kind. John continues, "On a more personal note, you guys have also been a light in my darkness. This past September, my mother passed away after a years-long fight with dementia. As harrowing as the experience throughout her illness was, it truly was nothing compared to the black hole that now resides in my heart without her. She was my best friend in the world. She was my movie buddy, and she was the greatest mother anyone could have asked for. And as if that wasn't enough, I just had to say goodbye to my dog Sam a mere 2 weeks ago, which would be painful enough, but it also brought all my grief over my mom back up to the surface. To say it's been a difficult time would be an understatement. But throughout these past months, one of the things that has consistently brought a smile to my face is listening to Force Center. Just hearing your guys' voices and your infectious enthusiasm for all things Star Wars brings a little joy to my heart. I consider that no small thing and want you to know how utterly thankful I am for that. Even before these recent events, I have long looked to Star Wars as one of my beacons of optimism and hope, the other being the Lord of the Rings. Even in the darker areas of the universe, I never fail to be inspired and lifted up, which is why I struggle so much with the negativity that seems to pop up in the fandom. And so, for my Power of the Light Side submission, I would like to focus on my experience of seeing Star Wars Episode 1 all those years ago when I was 15 years old. First saw the Star Wars trilogy as a young child, but my true love of the films didn't begin until the 1997 re-release of the special editions. Then 2 years later, The Phantom Menace, which I recall affectionately, I always refer to simply as Episode 1, arrived in theaters. It's important to bring up that I wasn't yet on any internet forums at the time. I had internet, but movie trailers the size of a postage stamp took 2 days to download. And I could be disconnected at the ring of a phone call. Man, brings me back. So I wasn't using it that much. The only reference I had for how Episode 1 was being received was talking to my friends. And I loved it. I loved it so much. It was a new Star Wars for my generation. It was my first new Star Wars. I was seeing the Jedi in their prime. The visuals were spellbinding. John Williams' music was captivating. Duel of the Fates was on constant repeat at home. I even loved Jar Jar. And yes, I was a young teenager, so I instantly had a crush on Natalie Portman. But more than anything, it was Star Wars. I imagine I probably had a silly grin on my face for the entire movie. It almost instantaneously became my favorite film of the saga. All my friends loved it too. We even watched it at my birthday party almost a year after its theatrical release. To me, it was an amazing time to be a Star Wars fan. And I lived innocently in that world for at least 2 years. Then the anticipation for Episode 2 began, and I started to become aware through both the internet and my workplace that all was not well in the larger fandom. And well,
the workplace,
I get it. And well, it all came crumbling down for a time. Negativity polluted my experience of the next two prequels, and I would not return to my undiluted love of Star Wars until many years later when I spotted the Season 1 Blu-ray set of The Clone Wars at the local Walmart. It would light my passion for Star Wars ablaze once more and give birth to my eventual favorite character of the franchise, Ahsoka Tano. But even then, with all that renewed joy, it seemed an uphill battle to just enjoy the story without having to endure snide comments whenever I let my guard down. The battle continues today, even with more widespread acceptance of the prequels, including my personal favorite, the much maligned Episode 1. Now I see that it's the sequels that must go through this sad rite of passage. Mm.
As I'm typing this, I realize it sounds a bit gloomy, but it's why I value your guys' podcast so much. Thank you once again for being a force for positivity in this fandom. I think it's so important now more than ever when watching media seems more like a sport than something people do for entertainment. To just get to sit and listen to you guys enjoy and truly engage with the story of Star Wars, well, it brings this fan so much joy. Bless you guys and thank you. Thank you for bringing light when I needed it mostly. Sincerely, John Webster. P.S. I'd be remiss in a discussion about positivity if I didn't thank Ken for speaking positively about Game of Thrones Season 8 in the past. It's lonely out here being a Season 8 fan, and the support is greatly appreciated. Smiley face. Great Power of the Light Side that ends with a smiley face. Ken, do you have any thoughts or reactions?
First of all, start at the end there. I've had people walk out of my fire pit parties upset at me for loving Season 8. But I'll say, it's certainly not a perfect season and absolutely needs some, you know, some questions to come out of it that are fun to have. John, just tell people to go watch Season 3 again and they'll connect more dots, hopefully. Anyways, yeah, I appreciate it. There's some first two episodes, a lot laid out there on those two characters, John and Danny. Anyways, I love all this here. This is a great one. And I think, Joseph, we've only narrowed our focus on this type of stuff in the last couple of years. I think it's always been present. It's always been present in how you and I approach the discussions. But as everything's changed and we've lived through, you know, many eras of Star Wars, it's important to, it's not this blind, just stick the sugar in my veins, joy of Star Wars. This stuff, if you're listening to the show consistently, you watch, it means a lot. It gets you through these moments, not unlike music. When I was in radio, some of the requests I'd get from people bawling their eyes out on the other end, I just had someone die. I need to hear this song, please. Mm. This stuff has value. It has meaning. We're just a small part of this cog, but we experience this stuff too. The darkness, John, you're almost making me cry with this, these tragedies he suffered, and that's close to all of our hearts here. We're a small part. I just love it. I really love this one. It's hit me at the right spot too, at the right time of, how we discuss things, choosing our words carefully. I don't believe jokes are just jokes. I think you can have just fun. Things are lighter. Some things can be intended, but I see a lot of comics out there who just are very callous and careless with their words, and they're very hurtful and it's very destructive. And that's a tough road to hold. But even the reframing and what's John is talking about. Sorry, this is engaging my soul here, Joseph, but him talking about, like, I loved it and I came out of the theater and was told no. Like, I experienced that with Indy 4. Again, not as perfect. There's some set pieces that don't work or some CJ. Yes, absolutely. There's little moments here. But I remember going, yeah, great. And everyone went no. And I went, oh, okay. And so I never watched the film again. I put it on the shelf until last year. Because I just was like, oh, that's wrong, right? And I know it drives some people crazy when movies are reevaluated. You hear a lot of, the rehabilitation of the sequels is beginning, is one person tweeted out about Babu Frick possibly being a Mando 3, right? We see that shot. And someone said, get ready, the rehabilitation of sequels is coming. So cynical, so dark, so gloomy, and so just overlooking the fact that this isn't about I just like anything or anything, but it's just like going out of their way to control the art, be above the art, take away the joy, and not understanding that things change, not understanding the perspective of other generations, not understanding that Indy 4 might have been someone's first Indy, and I loved a lot of it there. And how is a refrigerator any more crazy than Temple of Doom and a raft out of a plane? Tell me, like, what are we doing here? And it just all became the commentary on this stuff is throwaway, not the art. Not the content. Pop culture is not throwaway. The myriad podcasts just throwing it. They're the ones throwing it all away. Sorry, I'm starting to rant. I don't want to name names, but it's just and they go out of the way to not destroy joy, like they're taking away the joy, but to just not, they're not engaging with it and not getting the full scope of it. And that's what I love doing. I love zeroing on these moments. I love saying this little thing makes me feel better about the loss of my mother, that Star Wars could have anything to do with that. It's powerful stuff. It's powerful stuff. So John, I feel it. I'm going to end my positive rant there and say thank you.
It is an impassioned wish for positivity, an impassioned perspective on positivity, which is great. And I think what John is communicating so well is, you know, the submission, this Power of the Light Side essay is not gloomy. It's talking about the reality of
darkness is real. We lose people. We go through dark times, and we need things to help us through that. That's the light side. It isn't just everything's great. Everything's bunnies and rainbows.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the great powers of Star Wars. We were talking about wrestling with kind of how dark some things are in Star Wars, right? With how awful some of the things characters do, even characters that we come to care for and sympathize. And I think that's the power, is saying the really dark things happen. Life is really hard, and it can be really hard to choose the light side, to choose to say, this is something I love and I'm going to embrace it. This is something that I want others to see what I see and see the joy. And hey, if you don't like it and it's at the bottom of your list, that's fine. But we want to share that joy if at all possible. I think that's just a really powerful and necessary thing. And, you know, as somebody who loves Star Wars and is moved by it, I talked about the Bad Batch episode with Tech and Omega talking through their feelings, and Tech having that, like, well, hey, it sucks, but change is constant. You got to live through the storm, has helped me through the last 2 weeks of my life.
Yeah.
I really get that. But also is somebody who creates stories, right? To want people to engage with the heart of what a story can be. It is ultimately through all the ups and downs, through the, did you like it? Did you not like it? Did they do this scene well? Did they do this character well? Where is it on your rank? All that stuff is good and fun. But at the end of the day, it's a group of creators trying to communicate something about the way they feel, the way they see the world. And that's really what I want to do, is I just really want, that's the best of what stories can be. That's why we tell stories as humans, in my opinion. And I want to embrace them like that. Like they have something to truly say to us. And then we can, and then it's fine. If it didn't work for you, you didn't get that. You didn't like that. That's fine. But yeah, not foisting this. Here is the truth. This movie is bad, period.
Yeah. It used to be, you know, back in the day, do you like Empire, Jedi first, or New Hope was a fun argument that just fueled all of our love of Star Wars.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's definitely, the tone and tenor has changed. And I think that's why our focus has become a little bit more narrow in the last couple years, is because it's changed all around. As John mentions, the sports talk stuff. Again, I'm a giant sports fan, but I left the sports talk world because of that, because my joy of just watching the Yankees was ruined. It didn't have any joy anymore over it, and I couldn't take it, and to see it kind of slowly beat it. And I got, you know, a friend of mine who always argues with me about Star Wars, and I disagree with him on that stuff, but he was right about this. We were producing shows together during the ceremony. He's like, we are doing a disservice to this art. We are part of this problem. And I was like, nah, come on, it's a job. And I wish I could go back and clue in a little earlier, because it's something. It's something, John. So hold on to those lights.
Yeah. So great thoughts, John. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you for your kind words. And we are really, really honored if we can help even a little bit, because life can be difficult. So it is very good to find the joy. Any other final thoughts, Ken?
Absolutely not. I've said too much.
I, too, have said too much. I think we went longer on some other things than we did the Bespin Diner. There you go, from the Bespin Diner to the heart of bad choices in Star Wars, and a wonderful, wonderful essay from John. That is our episode. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Hive Social Wealth as Force Center. We are on Facebook at Force Center Podcast, on Instagram and YouTube, as we've mentioned before. New things over there, including some essays, as Joseph and I explained some of our love of little things in Star Wars, or the big moments, the things that move us. We got shorts. We got past episodes. All that stuff is there. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Get them before Disney takes them down. Patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly. Follow me at Ken Napsok, or go to my website, kennapsok.com. Hey, do you like music? Does music affect your life? It does me as well. So, hey, head on over to Pop Rockin' Radio, my radio show on Mixcloud. Joseph, where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the various social media. I still cling to Twitter. I'm having a lot of fun on Instagram, also Hive, Mastodon, TikTok, more unboxing, not unboxing videos coming to both TikTok and YouTube. And of course, you can go to YouTube and search for Joseph Scrimshaw. We're recording this on a Monday, but we're putting it out on Friday. So in my future, a tribute to tech essay has been put up on Force Center. So if you haven't checked that out, please check out my tribute to tech. But for now, that is it. So for myself, for Ken, for Darth Vader's Dinner Theater, this has been Cues of the Force.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.